Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the second canto, chapter 2, The Lord in the Heart. And we're on text number 14. Yavan na jayate. Actually, it's jayata paravare smin. Yavan na jayate paravare smin. Visveshvare drashtari bhakti yoga. Visveshvara drashtari bhakti yoga. Tavat staviyaha purusasya rupam. Tavat staviya purushasya rupam. Kriyavasane prayataha smarita. Kriyavasane prayata smarita. Yavanna jayate paravaresmin. Visveshvara drashtari bhakti yoga. Tavatstaviya purusasya rupam. Kriyavasane prayata smarita. Yavanna jayate paravaresmin. Visveshvare drashtari bhakti yoga. Tavatstaviya purusasya rupam. Kriyavasane prayataha smarataya. Smarata, smarata. Please chant. Yavanna jayate paravaresmin. Thank you. Vaishnavis. Vanna jayate paravarismin. Visveshvara dastari bhakti yoga. Tavatstaviya purusasya rupam. Yavasane priyatas marita. Yavat, as long as. Na, does not. Jayate, jayata, develop. Para, transcendental. Avare, mundane. Asmin, in this form of. Vishva Ishvare, the Lord of all worlds. Drastari, unto the seer. Bhakti Yoga, devotional service. Tavat, so long. Staviya, the gross materialist. Purushasya, of the Virat Purusha. Rupam, universal form. Kriya Avasane, at the end of one's prescribed duties. Prayataha, with proper attention. Smareta, one should remember. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental and material worlds, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties. Please repeat. Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental and material worlds, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties. Purport. The Supreme Lord is the seer of all worlds, both material and transcendental. In other words, the Supreme Lord is the ultimate beneficiary and enjoyer of all worlds, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 5:29. The spiritual world is the manifestation of his internal potency, and the material world is the manifestation of his external potency. The living entities are also his marginal potency, and by their own choice, they can live either in the transcendental or material worlds. The material world is not a fit place for living entities because they are spiritually one with the Lord, and in the material world, the living entities become conditioned by the laws of the material world. The Lord wants all living entities who is parts and parcels, to live with him in the transcendental world, and for enlightening the conditioned souls in the material world. All the Vedas and the revealed scriptures are there, expressly to recall the conditioned souls back home, back to Godhead. Unfortunately, the conditioned living entities, although suffering continually the threefold miseries of conditioned life, are not very serious about going back to Godhead. It is due to their misguided way of living, complicated by sins and virtues. Some of them who are virtuous by deeds began to reestablish the lost relation with the Lord, but they are unable to understand the personal feature of the Lord. The real purpose of life is to make contact with the Lord and be engaged in His service. That is a natural position of the living entities. But those who are impersonalists and are unable to render any loving service to the Lord have been advised to meditate upon His impersonal feature, the Virat Rupa, or universal form. Some way or other, one must try to reestablish one's forgotten relation with the Lord if one at all desires to gain real happiness in life and to reclaim His natural, unfettered condition. For the less intelligent beginners, meditation on the impersonal feature, the Virat Rupa, or universal form of the Lord, will gradually qualify one to rise to personal contact. One is advised herewith to meditate upon the Virat Rupa specifically in the previous chapters, or specified in the previous chapters, thank you, in order to understand how the different planets, seas, mountains, rivers, birds, beasts, human beings, demigods, and all that we can conceive are but different parts of the limbs of the Lord's Virat form. This sort of thinking is also a type of meditation on the Absolute Truth. And as soon as such meditation begins, one develops one's godly qualities and the whole world appears to be happy and peaceful. Be a happy and peaceful residence for all the people of the world. Without such meditation on God, either personal or impersonal, all good qualities of the human being become covered with misconceptions regarding his constitutional position. And without such advanced knowledge, the whole world becomes a hell for the human being. Wow. Om Ijnana Tamanandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshusha Militamena Tasmai Sri Guru Venama Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sabhitamena Bhutale Swayamupagadamayam Dadati Swabhadantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchikopa Tupishta Kripa Sindhu Vivacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namaha. So the verse again. Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental and material worlds, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties. So, the title of the chapter is The Lord in the Heart. So, this you could say the theme for this particular verse could be Bhakti Yoga. Actually, the theme of the entire chapter, or the theme of the entire Bhagavatam, is this Bhakti Yoga. So, this is what's being brought out here today also. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about how the Supreme Lord is the seer of all the worlds. So he sees everything, knows everything in the material and spiritual world. And he quotes the Bhagavad Gita 5:29. And I'll go there since Srila Prabhupada references that. That's the verse, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshparam Suvidam Sarvabhutanam Gyatvamam Santim Richate, which is translated as, a person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of the material miseries. So it's interesting, this verse that Prabhupada quotes right in the beginning of the purport is actually like a compact summary of actually his purport. In fact, it's a compact summary of the entire chapter. Because in this purport, Srila Prabhupada explains how the conditioned souls are caught in the clutches of this illusory energy and they're anxious to attain peace, but they don't know how to attain peace. They don't know the formula. So this is given in this verse. This is the actual formula, that he's the proprietor, he's the enjoyer, and he's the friend of everyone. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions here that unless one understands these bare facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in the world, either individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme proprietor of all living entities, including the great demigods, are his subordinates. One can attain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness. And then Prabhupada ends the purport with this, which is very nice. A pure soul is the eternal servant of God and its fragmental part and parcel. He comes in contact with Maya, illusion, due to the desire to lord it over Maya, and that is the cause of his many sufferings. As long as he is in contact with matter, he has to execute work in terms of material necessities. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life, even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter. For it is an arousing of spiritual existence by practice in the material world. The more one is advanced, the more he is freed from the clutches of matter. The Lord is not partial toward anyone. Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness, which helps one control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger. And one who stands fast in Krishna consciousness, controlling the above-mentioned passions, remains factually in the transcendental stage, or Brahma Nirvana. The Eightfold Yoga's mysticism is automatically practiced in Krishna consciousness because the ultimate purpose is served. There is a gradual process of elevation in the practice of Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. But these only preface perfection by devotional service, which alone can award peace to the human being. It is the highest perfection of life. So in this chapter, Sukadeva Goswami is going to explain to Maharaj Parikshit the whole process to become free from this mature world. And he's going to talk about this yoga system and the great yogis, the system to actually elevate oneself. So it's very interesting, this whole question by Maharaj Parikshit was, how should one spend his last days? And there's basically two things you can do, is that you could try to recover your consciousness and get deeper and deeper into illusion, or you could become more sincere and try to focus your consciousness on the Supreme. So this is what Maharaj Parikshit did. He summoned the mercy of Krishna through this Sukadeva Goswami. And he's asking him, what is the duty of one who's about to die? And Sukadeva Goswami glorified the question. He said, it's a great question. And he's saying the only duty, I mean, he answered that already in previous chapters, is to focus on Krishna. And any other duty will just help you forget Krishna. So it's either we have an eternal choice or a temporary choice. So if you give up the eternal for temporary, you lose everything. You see? But if you have the eternal, then you have nothing to lose. So we have this service either to the eternality or the temporal. So Sukadeva Goswami recommends that we follow the sages. Even throughout the entire Bhagavatam, there's so many examples. Like we're reading in the fourth canto now of Srimad Bhagavatam, how Prithu Maharaj was angry at the earth, Mother Bhumi, because she wasn't producing enough food for the living entities. They were starving. And he was about to actually kill her, cut her to pieces, and feed her to the people. So she became very afraid, and she started offering prayers to King Prithu. And one of the things she's saying is that, yes, we have to follow the sages because they're teaching the process of sacrifice and it's the only way to happiness. And she explains why she was hiding the grains and seeds because people were actually using all these gifts of nature for their own sense gratification and not offering them as sacrifice. So this is why she hid them. So we see whenever people are sinful, lives were misguided, then Mother Earth, actually we become punished by our own folly. So this is why she hid the grains. So Sukadeva Goswami is telling Mars Preacher, you have to be very brave and fearlessly renounce. Even like the Goswamis, we see these transcendental personalities in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the six Goswamis. Some of them, in today's standard, were trillionaires. And what did they do? They gave up everything for just to engage in devotional service. And they were showing us how we, without anything material, they can attain the highest happiness and pleasure simply by serving Radha Krishna. In fact, they were swimming and diving in this ocean of love. And they were just, all they had was like a loincloth to their name. They gave up everything. They had everything practically, and they gave it up for something higher. This is another example of serving either what we have, material or spiritual. So they gave all that up. So Sukadeva Goswami is, in this chapter, is explaining how this senses and this material maya is so strong that he's beginning to really become forceful in how he's speaking to him. And he's saying, even if the Vedas recommend sacrifices for sense gratification, he warned him that you should not do it. Don't do that. It's another form of bewilderment. So it's like, you know, trying to be happy in a material situation. As we read earlier, it's like hovering in dreams in a world of names only, trying to lay out plans in this, you know, this field of action that we have to live in, like a field of dreams. So even if we possess everything in the material universe, still we won't be happy. And we see many examples in the Bhagavatam. Hiranyakashipu tried to exploit the earth's resources and practically throughout the entire universe. And still the soul can't be happy in this material realm. It could only be happy in the eternal realm. So Sukadeva Goswami is very much trying to get King Parikshit to have this deep commitment to the spiritual path and that we should live life properly. Utilize the human energy. Don't waste it for nothing. You know, the senses are like highway robbers. There's a nice prayer that I like, and I always try to chant before the deities. I'm not sure where I got it. Somewhere in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, some devotee was chanting. And it goes like this. My dear Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and this is the age of Kali, which destroys all the good qualities of the living being. So that's one thing against us. We're in the age of Kali, right? And the next thing is our enemies. We have enemies, which are what? The senses. They're very strong. And they're trying to steal my greatest asset, which is that of discrimination. So when you become enjoy sense gratitude, you become mad, you become crazy. You don't have no discrimination. And then another block is the path of bhakti is blocked by millions of brambles. And what are those brambles? Trying to be happy in the material world. So it's brambles, those thorns along the path. And then another thing is, not only that, we're weak and agitated. So he's praying out, oh Lord Chaitanya, oh Lord Sananda, if you don't show me your mercy, where can I go? What can I do? So this material sense enjoyment does not equal happiness. So we have to learn to depend on Krishna. And this is what Sukadeva Goswami is trying to encourage the king to do. So because at the time of death, we have no one to depend on. Nobody's there. It's like you're flying your own plane, right? I mean, you could learn virtual plane, you know, riding and things like that. And people can help you and so many things. But once you're up in the air, you're on your own. So similarly, we're here on our own. We get so much help. But at the final hour of death, it's dependent on you. You have to surrender to Krishna. That's the only thing. So we have to develop our own Krishna consciousness and help others. That's our duty. So Sukadeva Goswami is explaining in this chapter so many things you should, you know, should do and should not do. You know, first he tells them the yoga system, so many yogis that can actually, by controlling the life errors going through the different chakras and ultimately leaving the planet, according to his desire, that yogi could go anywhere he wants. But if he still is not purified consciousness, he'll actually stay in the material world because he's carrying with him his subtle body, which is the mind and desire. So he can go anywhere. He can see anything. He could go on a vacation. He could go to different planets, whatever. But still, that's not the goal. So Prabhupada mentions that that's what we do. We help develop our own Krishna consciousness and help others develop Krishna consciousness. And what we should do is meditate on the super soul. And that's the chapter is entitled The Lord in the Heart. And it's explained in this chapter about the super soul. And that higher than meditation on the Virat Rupa, which is can lead to impersonalism, is meditation on the Lord in the heart. He's there with you. So with the help of the scriptures, we can actually understand how he's there. And not only that, Srila Prabhupada explains in this chapter how even with the help of intelligence, or to speak of the scriptures, just by using your own intelligence, you can understand how Krishna is there in the heart. And we'll have time, we'll explain the technique on how to do that. But Prabhupada mentions that just meditate on the super soul, you don't have to go anywhere, like the yogis in the universe. You don't have to go anywhere else. And then there's a lecture Srila Prabhupada gave on this chapter. There's only a couple lectures he gave on this chapter. And he mentions there how everyone may remain in his own position. It doesn't require to change. Just like one gentleman was asking me whether for spiritual advancement one has to live in the temple. I said, no, there is no such hard and fast rule that one should live in a temple. He can live anywhere, but the spiritual practices should be going on. Krishna never says that you live in the temple or you go to the jungle or Himalaya. Never says. You'll never find in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says, Arjuna, that you give up this fighting and go to the jungle or to the Himalaya and become perfect person. No, Krishna says, Manmana Bhava Madbhakto, Madhyaji Mam Namaskaru. That's from 1855 of the Bhagavad Gita. You follow this principle. Always think of me, Manmana Madbhakta. You become my devotee, Manmana Bhava Madhyaji. Worship me and offer your obeisances to me. These four things you can do anywhere. It doesn't matter. But you do all these things. So this is what he's telling. So it's nice. And then Prabhupada mentions in this lecture also, he says, how we shouldn't be harassed thinking, well, how am I going to maintain myself? You know, the Goswamis weren't worried about that, right? They just lived under a tree every night. All they had was to their possession was kopans. So we might say, how shall I be maintained? And Prabhupada says, that is not the problem. Maintenance is not problem. Real problem is how we shall be fully surrendered to Krishna. That is wanted. Upasanan. This is what Sukadeva Goswami is trying to impress on the king also. Upasanan means those who have surrendered. So if you fully surrender souls, then there's no problem for our economic advancement. That is automatically. It will be done. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yoga se mam vahami aham. Tesham nitya biyuktanam. Yoga se mam vahami aham. So that's 922. He personally takes care. He's taking care of others also. Nobody is dying for want of food. This is a misconception. Everyone is getting food according to his capacity. There are 8,400,000 species of life. Out of that, 8 million are lower grade, like life, fishes, plants, insects, trees. Jala nava lakshana stavara lakshana vimsati. 8 million. They have no business. They have no means of other income. By nature, they're getting all their supplies. So why not human being? Even the uncivilized human being, they're living in the jungle. They have no business. They have no source of income. But still, they're getting food. Similarly, why the civilized man should be so much anxious for their maintenance? It is due to lack of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, they are thinking, how shall I remain? The maintenance is already there. Simply, you have to work at it. You just till the ground or the field and sow some seeds. And naturally, in due course of time, one seed will give you thousands. So if you little work, there is no question of scarcity of foodstuff. Krishna has given everything. So our main business should be how to develop our dormant Krishna consciousness. That is our first business. And it says, we have lost our Krishna consciousness, therefore we have got so many problems in life. If you revive your Krishna consciousness, all problems will be solved. Isn't that amazing? So the stages to the goal is going to be described in this chapter. So first was the meditation on the universal form. And it's a form or a method of seeing spirit and matter. It's like the universal body of the Supreme. It consists of Him. It's where He's situated. It's an aspect of Krishna. But it's used by the impersonalists also. And they imagine things, that everything's one, whatever. So, in fact, this meditation is so powerful that even Lord Brahma, when he was first created, he couldn't understand how to create the universe. But by meditating on this universal form, he understood how he can do that. And then when we remember Krishna in the heart, like he did, the heart's purified, and then we can remember our service to Krishna and that we should serve Him. So even higher than this meditation, though, is to meditate on the super soul. And this is coming up in this chapter, where when the consciousness is completely purified and one's desires are one with the Lord, like his desire is one, his mission is one with the Lord, then he's not affected by the lower modes and is just satisfied with his connection with Krishna. And he has no illusion about the philosophy of Krishna. He's not bewildered by the philosophy. So, by this type of yoga of the super soul, one can actually develop cities also. And these cities is like another feature of dominating the mature world. Siri wants to ask a question. Okay, sorry about that. Sometimes she picks up the voice. So higher than this is the meditation on the super soul, as we described. And one can develop different cities. And they're just features of domination in the mature world. Another feature. They're attractive. It's a way we want to be a controller. And it's like a mechanical way we can raise up the soul, as I mentioned, through the different chakras. And depending on the desires, we can go anywhere. But this is a very intricate, it's a very difficult form of advancement. So this is like meditating. It's like on the gross things, but the more refined you become, the gross, what can be more gross than the universal form, then you go more subtle to the super soul and the heart. And then as you become more and more refined, then you get higher and higher purification, higher and higher enjoyment and intelligence like that. And this helps us rid of all these gross material desires. And then as we go deeper, we rid of more and more subtle desires. So it's like that. So, and then as we get purified, you could go more and more to higher planets where it's more refined. It's more refined enjoyment. In fact, you could go to Lord Brahma's planet, the yogi, and he could live for 16 trillion years. And you could imagine the enjoyment there. There's no anxiety. There's no misery. What to speak of. Of course, there's temporary, but still. But we want to go even farther than that, where there's no misery, no anxiety. And if one goes to this most wonderful place of the spiritual world, then it's described that one has no anxiety, even if you're here in the mature world. The only anxiety you have is compassion for the suffering of living entities. You see, so this is what happens. We're trying to reverse the process of creation as we go on more and more subtle elements, ultimately to the false ego, which is the most subtle, which mixes with different modes and it produces different products. So what we're trying to do in this chapter, Swami is going to explain how to reverse that process. So here you can see it's so intricate and difficult. So he's explaining this all to to Maharaj Pariksit. And then he says, actually, you shouldn't do this. But now I'll tell you actually what to do. There's an easier way. And Lord Chaitanya teaches this easier way. It's simply by the process of devotional service. You get this seed of bhakti and you water it by chanting. And you be careful of the weeds and material desires. And then the seed fructifies. And then that plant grows. It goes all the way to the spiritual world. So you don't have to go through all this very intricate and difficult process. So he's telling him that what you should actually do, there's even a more auspicious process, and it's devotional service. It's like an arrow. You shoot an arrow, you go straight to the bullseye. I'd probably use another analogy of like the elevator, which goes, you know, very quickly. You don't have to take all the steps. So this is the process. And this is the conclusion, is that we have to have this attraction for Krishna. That's the goal of all these other processes. Because He's in every living entity. And you can actually see the Lord there with the help of the scriptures, as I mentioned. And also with the help of the intelligence. So in the last three verses of this chapter, Sukadeva Goswami tells what he should do. He's telling him all these processes, but he said, no, actually, you should just do this. And he's telling him how you can actually see the super soul, you know, in the heart without, you know, not only with the scriptures, but just with the help of your intelligence. And this is the verse, it's 35 of this chapter. He says, the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. So this is very important. So unfortunately, the noise distraction is going to help not focus on this particular thing. But this is a very, very important technique that we should have on how to see the super soul. Just simply by using your intelligence. And everybody could do this. And it's so important. Prabhupada explains the whole process in the purport. I'm not going to read the whole purport, but maybe I'll just summarize a few things to give you an idea. It's on text 35, which I'd recommend reading. So Prabhupada mentions right in the first of the purport, he says, the general argument of the common man is that since the Lord is not visible to our eyes, how can one either surrender to Him or render transcendental loving service to Him? So to such a common man, here's a practical suggestion given by Sri Sukadeva Goswami on how one can perceive the Supreme Lord by reason and perception. So now he explains the procedure. So he says, one can perceive one's self-identification and feel positively that he exists. He may not feel it abruptly, but he, with a little help of intelligence, he can actually feel that he's not the body. Just like you can feel that the hand, the leg, the hair, the limbs, all these are bodily parts. But as such, the hand, the leg, the head, they cannot be identified as yourself. Therefore, just by using intelligence, he can distinguish and separate himself from other things that he sees. So it probably uses that examples like, you know, show me your hand, you know, my hand, you know, my face, my leg, my things. But where are you? It's not that we are a hand, we're not a leg, we're not these things. But we're actually separate from these things. So this is what it's trying to help us do. Now he goes on. So since you can see, we can readily agree that the living being who sees things beyond himself by ordinary vision, that we have no power to see or move independently. This is another point. That even in our ordinary actions of perception, it depends on different forms of energy supplied by nature in different combinations. So just like we have the five perceptions of hearing, touching, sight, taste, smell, you know, as well as our five senses of action, as we mentioned, the hands, the legs, speech, all these different organs that we have, they're all supplied to us by various arrangements of gross and subtle forms of natural energy. And so, Prabhupada mentions here, and it is equally evident that our objects of perception are nothing but the products of the inexhaustible permutations and combinations of the forms taken by natural energy. And this conclusively proves that the ordinary living being has no independent power of perception or of motion. And if we undoubtedly feel our existence being conditioned by nature's energy, we conclude that he who sees all this is spirit. So this is a spiritual quality, is that we are a seer. And how is that manifest? By our dissatisfaction in this limited state. So we're completely dissatisfied. We find everyone. This is the proof that we're spiritual, because we can't be satisfied here. There's no satisfaction. So this is the difference between spirit and matter. So Prabhupada mentions here, and he says here, so now we come to the point that things which are seen by little use of intelligence cannot be animate unless we accept someone as the user or director of the intelligence. So intelligence gives one direction like some higher authority. And the living entity cannot see or move or eat or do anything without the use of intelligence, right? So you can see if one is less intelligent, you find there's so much in misery. When one fails to take advantage of intelligence, he becomes a deranged man. And so a living being is dependent on intelligence or the direction of a superior being. Such intelligence is all-pervading. Every living being has this intelligence. And this intelligence, being the direction of some higher authority, is just like a father giving direction to his son. The higher authority who is present and residing within every individual living being is the super soul, the super self. So this is what it is. So Prabhupada goes in so many different things. So Prabhupada ends here. I'm just going to end here. Srila Prabhupada says, so this is a conclusion. So far as the common sense is concerned, we come to the conclusion that there are three identities, namely matter, spirit, and the super spirit. Now, if we go to the Bhagavad Gita, or the Vedic intelligence, we can further understand that all three identities, namely matter, individual spirit, and the super spirit, are all dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. See, because the super soul is an expansion of Krishna that is everywhere. So the super self is a partial representation or plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Bhagavad Gita affirms that the Supreme Personality of Godhead dominates all over the material world by his partial representation only. God is great, and he cannot be simply an order supplier of the individual selves. Therefore, the super self cannot be a full representation of the Supreme Self, Purushottama, the Absolute Personality of Godhead. Realization of the super self by the individual self is the beginning of self-realization. And by the progress of such self-realization, one is able to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead by intelligence and by the help of the authorized scriptures and principally by the grace of the Lord. So this is the process. It's really nicely described in that. That purport, everyone, I'd recommend reading. So this is how Sukadeva Goswami ends the chapter with these two verses. That, you know, after I explain all this, no, this is what you really should do. He says, O King, it is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. And then the last verse. Those who drink through oral perception or oral reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment, and thus go back home, back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Him, the Personality of Godhead. Isn't this nice? So, I mean, I had more things to mention here, but it's getting late, and I think I would just like to end, since I said the title of the verse, like the theme could be Bhakti Yoga. And as we see all throughout the Bhagavatam, it's like that. There's one verse when Ishvara Puri, the spiritual master of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he revealed the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam to him. And what was it to simply chant the name in an ecstatic love, and how the chanter becomes overwhelmed with divine emotions. And to illustrate this, he pointed a verse in the Bhagavatam, which explains this. And this is in the 11th canto. Let's see, what's the verse? Anyway, I'll find it for you. But it's described. I'll just read the verse. By chanting the holy name of the Supreme Lord, one comes to the stage of love of Godhead. Then the devotee is fixed in his vow as an eternal servant to the Lord. And he gradually becomes very much attached to a particular name and form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As his heart melts with ecstatic love, he laughs very loudly or cries or shouts. Sometimes he sings and dances like a madman, for he is indifferent to public opinion. So this is a very deep verse where actually once we get this taste, you don't care about anything material, nor do you care about any other material criticism or anybody's idea. There's no alternative to this. It's just so nice. And in the purport, there's a nice verse they quote at the end here. It says, "Let the garrulous populace say whatever they like. We shall pay them no regard. Thoroughly maddened by the ecstasy of intoxicating beverage of love of Krishna, we shall enjoy life running about, rolling on the ground, and dancing in ecstasy." That's from the Padyavali 73. So that's our goal. This is what real happiness is. And this is the process. So any comments, questions, realizations? Okay. Oh, yes. Well, when we leave the body, we should take shelter of Krishna and the holy names. And we're practicing throughout our life. So that's the real test. That's the test we take of how well you practice during your life, devotional service, thinking of Krishna, glorifying Him. So at the time of death, that will be tested. So depending on, you know, your advancement, your practices, and the mercy of the devotees and Supreme Lord, you will remember Krishna. You don't have to worry about taking anything or nothing there. But just the name is everything. Just shelter the name. Just surrender to Krishna. That's all you could do. Surrender. And just forget everything. Give up everything. Yeah, so. I think there was another hand. Yes. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Mystic perfections, in order to attain them, you have to meditate on the super soul, even if they're material. That's the whole process. If you read in the 11th canto, it talks, I think Uddhava explains, or Krishna explains to Uddhava the whole process of mystic yoga. How you could become lighter than a feather, how to become heavier than a mountain. They're called siddhis, or S-I-D-D-H-I, siddhi, which means perfections, but they're material perfections. H-I, yeah. I see what you, I missed that point, siddhi. We want to get out of these material cities and go to the spiritual city. Spiritual world, eternal city. Yeah. Okay, I guess that's it. Now it's time to wake up. Hare Krishna. All right. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam Gaura Srila Prabhupada.